How does the mayhem around Jerusalem coincide with Bible prophecy? And what about America's war on terror? With the best explanation you'll get, Garner Ted Armstrong.
Because I'm taping this program a few days before 9/11, actually on Monday the 9th, and in anticipation of what might take place then, I cannot know in advance what might occur, what some of the terrorists have planned, if anything, for that day. I'm sure they have a lot of plans, a lot of hopes and dreams, a lot of wishes. I just hope that the recent activities on the part of the Israelis, the United States, and in Germany and elsewhere have thwarted a lot of the plans of the terrorists of what they were hoping to do on the anniversary of that mindless, horrific attack on 9/11 a year ago. Well, I remember that, and I'm sure you do too. You probably remember exactly where you were, what you were doing when you first heard about it. I was sitting in an airliner on my way to the 50th reunion, my first, but the 50th for my ship. The USS Antietam, CV-36, was having its 50th reunion in Norfolk, Virginia. And I was somewhere over eastern Arkansas at about 35,000 feet, sitting there in a very calm day, just like in your living room, looking out the window at the blue sky and the passing terrain. I had a window seat. And all of a sudden, the captain pulled the power back, and we started in a fairly steep left turn. Now, having been a jet pilot for over 30 years, I knew something was very wrong immediately, because right in the middle of a flight, on cruise, on autopilot, you simply don't have things like that happen. It was several minutes, actually, into that turn before he came on and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to be diverted temporarily. We're going to have to interrupt your trip," is the way he put it, "to Norfolk today, because we've been asked to land at Little Rock." And then he did make no more announcement until quite lower down, and we were in the landing pattern, and he said, "As you can see," and we could see other aircraft out there, "we are not alone." He said, "Over 1,000 airplanes have been grounded and diverted because there had been some kind of a threat," is all he said, "in the New York City area. And all aircraft going into that area have been told to divert." I didn't know until I got inside the terminal in Little Rock, and here were about 17 big airliners all dumping hundreds of people apiece into that little terminal all of a sudden. You talk about chaos. And here were these huge buildings and that second airplane flying into them, and the buildings burning and beginning to crumple. People were sitting on the floor. They were crying. They were standing there looking aghast. It was a huge, big monitor right inside the terminal. And I immediately said, "Bin Laden." Because only 2 weeks or 3 weeks earlier than that, I had told our own local congregation here in Tyler, Texas, that I had heard from a newspaper, either Aram or one of the others in Egypt, that there had been some member, apparently later on we determined that he was a member of Al-Qaeda, that had allowed a leak which had stated in the newspaper that there was something big, those were their words, something big is going to happen. Now to me, that meant another ship, maybe a U.S. installation, maybe an attack on American aircraft carrier, maybe a military base abroad, an embassy, an information center, tourists, whatever. But the idea that a huge attack could happen on American shores and inside our own nation and the two biggest, tallest, most recognizable buildings virtually in the world, never remotely occurred to me. And you know, during this week as they're replaying all of that, and I will not be able to be talking to you until the weekend following 9/11, and maybe I can speculate a little bit because I've got something that I want to pin it to here in a minute. There's no way that I can know what's going to happen between Monday the 9th and a week from now when you see it very early off WGN or some of the other stations like in Springfield, Missouri and down in New Orleans and elsewhere over the weekend. So since this is not a newscast anyway, a news broadcast, but a program that deals a great deal with biblical prophecy, I can talk about trends, conditions, circumstances, about the Bible, about the Middle East, about what Jesus Christ says is going to happen in the environs of Israel and Jerusalem. But I can also talk a little bit philosophically, I think, about the American mood and attitude, about Europe, about the United Nations, about the Middle East, about the entire scenario of where we are right now in world events. And I have something very important for you I want you to get. That is a book that entitled Mideast Strife, Will It Lead to Armageddon? We've all heard about the famous Battle of Armageddon, that final great battle between the forces of good and evil, Satan the devil on the one hand, and Almighty God on the other, and the armies, millions of them strong, that are to be gathered into a valley about 90 miles north of Jerusalem called the Battle of Armageddon. Is what is happening today, all this strife, the potential of war against Iraq, and Iraq launching missiles, and perhaps this time carrying chemical or biological weapons against Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, and what the Israelis might do in response, which might actually trigger a nuclear war, not only in that region, but all over the place, is it going to lead toward that final great battle? In that booklet, you will also see a great deal about Islam, about the origin of what used to be called Mohammedanism, or Muhammad, Mahomet, as he's called by the Turks, who he was, where he got his ideas, where his religion came from, about the fact that he was a caravan robber, all the things in that early life, and some of the sources that you can go to get in additional information. Also have a tape entitled Prophecy From Now On, a step-by-step scenario from the pages of your Bible about what we expect to happen in the few years ahead of us right now, and what part are you personally going to play in all of that? What does it mean to you, your family, your children and grandchildren, where you live, and what should you or can you be doing about it, if anything? You know, as I see all this rehearsal of these events, it irritates me no end when I think back to the time, which I also remember vividly, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. And when they did that, the United States was just like a great big fire ant hill that someone had kicked over. We were furious. We were out of our minds with rage, with outrage, with anger. It was boiling over. And yes, mistakes might have been made that the historians and revisionists can talk about, such as the deporting, well, actually internment, of Japanese from the West Coast. Who knows whether or not there were certain agents among the decent people in Nisei, the Americans, that actually went into internment with them. We don't really know that, and we probably never will know it. But the point is that the media today is telling us this was a tragedy, 9/11. It was a catastrophe. It was horrific. It was terrible. It was lots of things. And every now and then the word attack. But isn't it strange that they rarely show you the faces of the men who did it? That they identify the culprits, the people who perpetrated it? Isn't it strange that they want us to understand? And even the First Lady has said that Americans shouldn't show it to their children. Why not? Why not? Families, parents, show their children what happened and who did it and why. And explain why they hate us. And the idea that they hate freedom, I'm sorry, I know that's been bandied about, I know that's politically correct, I know it's what our president says, that they hate and despise America because of our freedom. No, it isn't that, it's just our freedom. This is a religious war. They hate us because they believe they are of God and we are of the devil. It is us, them. It is the traditional ivory-towered, cloistered, us, them attitude. We are perfect. We are flawless. We are divine. We have imams who directly speak to God and speak to us. They are God's spokesmen. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad was his only prophet. And if you say that, you're practically inside Islam. And it is religious, and it is the attack on the part of Islam which wants to subjugate the United States and turn us into an Islamic republic. Do you know that Islam is the fastest growing religion inside the United States in spite of those attacks on 9/11? Do you know where Islam is growing faster than anywhere else? In America's prison systems, among young, impressionable blacks, many of whom have been on drugs or alcohol and been convicted of all kinds of crimes, who are rootless, without an anchor, who want something to believe in. A vast majority of them are without a home and a home life and don't know who their father was. And as a result, they are disoriented. They have no goals. They have no purpose in life. And when someone comes along and gives them something to cling to, seeming to have the answers to life, here's the way you ought to conduct yourself. Here's the way you ought to live. Here's what's wrong with society. It was society's fault. It's the evil society around you. It's bad companions. It's the poverty. It's what happened way back in the 17th and 18th centuries, and the sharks are still swimming the route. It's what happened when our forebears, the white Caucasian Americans, kept those poor people's forebears as slaves. And they're all these people to blame. And so they are fair game for some of these teachers who would imbue and to instill into their minds the attitude that Islam is the answer. It's happening, folks, and that's what they are after. They want to become such a block. Look at this now, think about it, that eventually they are such a political and a voting block that they outnumber the Jews. And eventually when they succeed in that, they believe that they will then unpin this unique relationship politically, militarily, and the defense spending and all the rest of it between the United States and Israel. That is one of their goals. You need to understand the goal of Islam. The goal of Islam is to convert the world either by, as this kind of thing, infiltration and subtleties and all that type of activity, or at the edge of the sword, so to speak, which they did, which is what is really behind the wars that took place in the Balkans and Kosovo and Albania, when you really understand it. And you'll get some of that all in that booklet, by the way, because it goes into the roots of some of that kind of thing. Now, I want to tell you something that I don't know that this is going to happen. By the time you see this program, it will either have happened or it won't have happened prior to the 12th or 13th, but it might have happened on the 11th. If not, it probably will happen at some time in the future, and you don't hear a whole lot about it. Remember the young kid that allegedly committed suicide by flying a light plane into a high-rise building down in Tampa, Florida? Remember the other one over in Europe? And remember the attack the other day? The military said it was only about 20, less than two dozen aircraft. Debka file said about 100 aircraft. In any event, however many aircraft there were, most Americans never even heard about an attack against two air bases about 75 miles west of Baghdad in the western Iraqi desert, which took out a couple of air bases where there were not only drones, but apparently trainer-type aircraft that surveillance from satellites had determined there were spray nozzles on them, just exactly like a crop duster in Mississippi. And they had gone in there with quite a number of aircraft. You know, usually there are just two of them, like F-15 Strike Eagles or Tornadoes or something else, flying along to enforce the southern and the northern no-fly zones in Iraq. You're aware of that. A flight of two, maybe a few more, but nearly always just a flight of two. This time there were perhaps almost two dozen aircraft that went in there and took out those bases and just destroyed them. Now, it was billed as an advance attack to pave the way for blinding, that is doing in the radar and the early warning system, command and control centers out there, so that to pave way for the invasion which they believed in the Debka file was imminent. Be that as it may have been the first little bit of an overture to the attack upon Iraq, which almost everybody believes is going to come. Now, by the time you see this program, George Bush will have gone, not on bended knee, I hope, to the United Nations and pled his case. If I were George Bush, I would address them as the disunited non-nations. I would say Seychelles, Cape Verde Islands, and all you other great nations from Iceland to Mauritius, pay attention. And then I would have said, you people have passed resolution after resolution after resolution against Saddam Hussein. You told him he cannot have chemical, nuclear, and biological weapons. You told him that any stocks he currently has must be destroyed. You told him by a resolution that he must allow unfettered, open, free access by UNESCO informers or people who were searching it out. They were called spies. Well, of course, that's what they were to do, was to spy out all of his stocks and what he was doing. But they were kicked out of the country, Butler and his ilk, and nobody said a word about it. We just said, oh, well, that's too bad. They won't let us do it. And before that, they were obfuscating everything, saying, no, you can't come in here. No, that's a palace. And we know that with German help and European help, that there were four, five, six, eight stories of bunkers beneath many of those palaces inhabited by Saddam. And he goes to a different one every single night because he doesn't trust anybody as to where he's going to sleep. And that they are fortresses in which munitions and all kinds of things and a cadre of his closest bodyguard can, of course, be billeted. And they weren't allowed to go into any of those areas. Tell the United Nations you have made all these resolutions and you have not enforced a single one of them. You're a paper tiger, You don't have any teeth. You growl. Your bark is worse than your bite. Why should I be coming to you when I'm the only one apparently that is willing to do something about what you yourselves have said ought to be done? I don't know what he's going to say. But I hope he says something like that, and I wish it were my turn to talk to the United Nations. Well, enough of that. Let me take a quick time out and let you be sure to get this booklet and the tape, and I'll be right back.
If you're concerned about the virulent hatred of America throughout the Arab world, the never-ending violence surrounding Jerusalem, and America's escalating military involvement, get your free copy of Middle East Strife, Will It Lead to Armageddon? And the tape, Prophecy From Now On. The booklet and the tape are yours free of charge if you call 903-561-7070.
Well, I became typewriter in the Dassault Brigade Fanjet Falcon DA-20, the 20F model. I had to go to flight safety. That was at LaGuardia. They also have others like in Long Beach, California, and other areas around the country. The airlines have their own flight schools as well. And when they recruit people, primarily who come from the military, having had a great deal of flight experience, they don't just go out here and recruit people. Hey, would you, Pastor, come here. Would you like to become an airline pilot? Not the way they do it. Airlines pilots do not train in Cessna 172s and little single-engine aircraft. But right here in Tyler, Texas, there is a flight school, and I was so outraged when I heard about this in the early spring this very year that I was beside myself. There were a whole group, I think 14 of them, as I recall, of Algerians. Remember, Moussaoui is an Algerian. Remember, Algeria is mostly Sunni Muslim. And they were at a flight school here in Tyler, Texas, and buzzing around over my head because I live down south of Tyler, which is a training area right over Lake Palestine where they fly all the time. And I put up with this for 14 solid weeks during the summer, two and three aircraft at a time. Every time I'd look up, here was one of these guys I knew up there learning how to fly a light plane. Allegedly, they came from Algeria. Well, Algeria, you know, was virtually a colony of France, and France has lots of flight schools. I imagine so does Algeria. There's Air Algérie, there's Air France, and they've got their simulators. When you learn to fly a jet airplane, you go into a simulator that is exactly like the cockpit of the jet you're going to fly. It is so realistic that you get the motion, you see the runways coming, everything is so realistic, it's just exactly like flying the airplane. Then you go out, and you're in the right seat with an instructor, and you actually fly the plane. And then finally, you are hired if you are qualified, and you learn after all that. You got to go through all the systems, the air conditioning, the electric, the hydraulic, and all the other systems. You got to learn all of that. Never, never, never does any nation, any airline, recruit people off the street and say, I want you to go to America, and I want you to go to a flight school and learn how to fly a Cessna 172. And when you do that, you come back with your little flight certificate. You now know how to fly a single-engine airplane. We will let you fly our great big 767 jets. Nonsense. Well, I also learned that a group of them had piled into Meacham Field near Fort Worth in Dallas, Texas, and that one of those flight schools is owned by an Arab. Well, I got on my computer, and I wrote outrageous emails to the IMS, to the FBI, to the CIA, to the White House, to the State Department, in some cases two and three letters each time, and never even so much as got an acknowledgement that they'd received the letter. I called the flight school. I got their press release and published it in our newspaper. I put articles outraged against it in our website. In other words, I did all I could. Now, it's going to be absolutely unbelievably ironic to me personally if there are light planes, and it's what, about a 30-40 minute flight from Tyler, Texas, down to Crawford, Texas, which is the Texas White House now, where heads of state sometimes come with George Bush. You know, if light planes are used as guided missiles, maybe to disperse chemical or biological weapons, or even to fly into a crowded stadium or a crowded building or some kind of a picnic, I don't care whether it's a school or what, if that's what they have in their minds, and that's what they're going to do, because bin Laden said the storm of aircraft is not going to stop. Now, all these steps have been taken allegedly, which are going to prevent any of them from getting into the cockpit of a large jet. sometimes we worry about that when those reporters were able to get aboard with a box cutter, but even so, they probably couldn't have got into the cockpit. And thankfully, they are going to begin arming some, if not all of the pilots, at least those who go take the training and qualify. And that's a good point. So really, what difference does it make if somebody has a box cutter aboard an aircraft and you stop to think about it? Because I really think that the mood of most of the traveling public is today, based upon that courageous man, bless his heart, who said, let's roll, that it would probably take 20, 30, or 40 of them aboard an aircraft to even begin to subdue the passengers themselves before they try to kick down a very reinforced cockpit door. All right, well, I'm talking about things because, after all, your news and mine have been absolutely laden with all of this in the last week or so. It's about all you can hear and think about. It's on everyone's mind. And I am kind of waiting to see with bated breath about what's going to take place on the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th of this month, and to see what happens thereafter. I know what the overall trends are from the Word of God, because remember, the Bible is a Middle Eastern book, and Jesus Christ was a Middle Easterner. And he viewed the world from the vantage point of Jerusalem and the so-called Holy Land. And his prophecies were delivered right there on the Mount of Olives in the environs of modern-day Jerusalem, and they highlight what is to happen in modern-day Israel, and what will happen next, and what will happen after that. And it's all in that booklet that I want you to get. I don't want to take a time out here in a moment and let you be sure to get that telephone number and get that booklet, Mideast Strife, Will It Lead to Armageddon? Because it gives you a step-by-step sequence of events, one following the other, about what you can expect to happen in the near future in the light of Bible prophecy. Take a look at this, and I'll be right back.
If you're concerned about the virulent hatred of America throughout the Arab world, the never-ending violence surrounding Jerusalem, and America's escalating military involvement, get your free copy of Middle East Strife, Will It Lead to Armageddon? And the tape, Prophecy From Now On. The booklet and the tape are yours free of charge if you call 903-561-7070.
One-third of your Bible is prophecy, and Jesus Christ of Nazareth was the greatest prophet who ever lived. He looked down beyond his time into our day, and he foretold events that are to occur today, that have been occurring in the past, and will occur in the very near future, and that are actually developing and shaping up right now. It is a prophecy that has to do with wars and rumors of wars, with droughts increasing and chaos and upsets in the weather, with famines, with disease epidemics spreading all over the place. Look at AIDS, look at the West Nile virus. That's small comparatively, I know, but nevertheless, there are those diseases which are spreading here and there around the world. And Jesus Christ, in the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, in the famous Olivet Prophecy, gave a step-by-step series of events that are going to take place that leads toward the overthrow of governments of this world and a complete destruction of civilization as we know it. Now, don't kid yourself that that can't happen. You know right now that the United States and the former USSR, Russia, and several of the Soviet republics that exist now as a result of the fallout and the implosion of the SSR are nuclear armed. You know that Britain has the bomb, that France has the bomb. You know that Pakistan and India have the bomb. You know that China has the bomb, and that waiting in the wings and suspected to have the bomb are nations such as Brazil, South Africa, Germany, and some others. And you know that Iraq is about to have the bomb, maybe in a matter of months and certainly less than a year. So here you are, living in a world festooned with weapons, with nuclear submarines, with all kinds of bombers and intermediate range and ICBM missiles. The Chinese have a whole bunch of them pointed at American cities, as you well know. We live in a world with a nuclear, chemical, and biological capacity to eradicate humanity. That's how insane some of the weapons are. So when Jesus Christ said to his disciples the time was going to come and there wouldn't be one stone left atop another, that would have been, as I said, to a group of people I know somewhere in the East Coast. I was back for a personal appearance campaign within about a month or two before 9/11 last year. And when he said, as they were showing him these wonderful big buildings at a temple, I'm telling you the time is going to come when there will not be one stone left atop another here that shall not be thrown down. I merely made the analogy at that time to my audience because those twin trade towers were so predominant and overwhelming when you looked at the landscape of New York, when you look at the skyline, I said, that would be just like telling a modern person walking the streets of New York saying, look at all these fantastic skyscrapers, look at all these huge buildings. I'm telling you the time is going to come when not one piece of concrete is going to be standing atop another. Unbelievable. I was merely drawing on the analogy. But you know, that's just how astounding it would have sounded to those disciples. And so no wonder when Jesus said that, they immediately said to him, tell us, when are these things going to happen? And what will be the sign of your coming? He said, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Now, you've got to go to the book of Daniel, especially the 11th and 12th chapters, the book of Revelation, and put it together with Matthew 24 and Luke 21 to see what is the sequence of events that are going to occur prior to the intervention of God in human affairs. And there is going to come an intervention of Almighty God in human affairs. Jesus Christ really portrayed his intervention as being for the great glory and the good and the benefit of mankind, that in essence, God is going to send Christ back to this earth at the last moment, at the 11th hour, prior to the time when, if God did not intervene, the insane nations of this earth would destroy the world and every human being on it. And God, in short, is going to cut us down from the gibbet where we have hung ourselves and are about to perish. So Christ is coming to make war, yes. But he's coming to make war against war-making nations who will fight him at his coming. You need to understand what is that prophetic scenario. What are the events to occur from now till then? What should you be looking for in Europe, in the Middle East? Is the United States of Europe going to send a rapid response force into the Middle East to occupy Israel, this time under the idea of protecting the Jews, as well as actually grasping control of the world's oil reserves? Is that what is going to happen? I want you to get that in this booklet called Mideast Strife, Will It Lead to Armageddon? It's free of charge, and also this sermon that was delivered before a live audience entitled Prophecy From Now On, both of them dealing with these overall trends and conditions. They don't deal with a small plane flying into a building or a sports arena, but they do deal with Islam, its roots and origins, and why they are so angry at the United States, and what we can expect to happen from now on. All you need to do to get both the booklet and the tape is to dial 903-561-7070. That's 903-561-7070. And, of course, as is all of our literature and tapes, it's free of charge, no price whatsoever. No bill to follow. No one's ever going to dun you for anything. It doesn't even cost you anything. Well, except the price of a phone call and stamp. Not even stamp. We'll provide a stamp. We'll send it out to you free of charge, no price. Once again, it is 903-561-7070 for the booklet, The Mideast Strife, Will It Lead to Armageddon? And this tape, Prophecy From Now On. And I'll see you right here, same time, same channel in 1 week.
Post Office Box 345, North City, New South Wales.